Of course, Dave Aranda is the head coach of the Baylor Bears, right? And he came from LSU, but this big bad SEC who's just beating everyone is so much better than the Big 12, right? Well, maybe that gap's shrinking, or is there even a gap? This is Locked On Baylor.
You are Locked On Baylor, your daily podcast on the Baylor Bears, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Drake Toll from Sikkim365, joined by John Garcia Jr., Director of Recruiting at Sports Illustrated. Thank you for making Baylor and Locked On Baylor your first listen every single day. John, you know, there's this thing, you know, it just means more, right? The old adage that in the SEC, everything's bigger and better, and these teams are just in a different league, literally and figuratively, than everybody else in the nation. And just from a broad standpoint, is that true in 2021 on Wednesday, May 11th?
I think you meant 2022. I know it's finals week, so you're fine. Look, I think, you know, largely, yes. I do think that it's totally different in the SEC at the top. And I think that is where we dilute all of our conference perceptions, I would say across the board, right? People say, well, the Pac-12 is extremely down. Well, it's because USC and Oregon transitioned, right? And they've got new coaching staffs now. So yeah, surely you're going to feel that way. If Michigan is the representative in the playoff coming out of the Big Ten, we say, well, what's going on with Ohio State? I mean, it really is about the schools at the very top. So in that regard, sure. Georgia and Alabama have been the epitome of high end of college football and recruiting over the last several years. And obviously they just played in the national title game itself. So from that standpoint, yes. Of course, those two are really where the conversation begins. But you can also extract them and begin to break down the SEC pretty quickly thereafter, which is, I think, the case in all five of the Power Five conferences. You've got your power or two in each. And then after that, a whole lot of question marks and or transition. And I think when there is transition, which is obviously what's happening in the Big 12, that is where you start to see the perception start to change. So I think this is the beginning of that transition for the Big 12. Now, Baylor is one of these, you know, steadfast points in the conference that you have to deal with from a football and even from a basketball perspective. So I do think that's why the perception maybe feels like it's changing and widening in one sense. But when you start to break down the depth of the conference, you know, you start to see a lot of similarities between all five of these, including the Big 12 and the SEC. So, yes, at the top, it does mean a little bit more today. But after that point, you start to level the playing field quite a bit when you get into kind of the long term stability, recruiting success, all of those things. So it's, you know, it's one of those things that you ask me 2 days from now and I might have a different answer. But I think we just get a little top heavy in college football. And usually that's OK.
John, and I think people will skip over, this is a fun aside, but they always look at like, oh, college football today is more top heavy than it's ever been and have never heard of Tom Osborne, right? Or have never seen these dominating runs that different teams, Nebraska or USC or Alabama have made in the past. And I, you know, it's always been a top heavy sport, but one of the things that I point to is the fact that it fluctuates from a conference standpoint. You know, you go back to early days where the Big 12 is really strong with Texas and Oklahoma in the mid-2000s, or then you flip to 2015, it's like, oh, shoot, none of them are playing defense. What then has gotten the SEC to where it is today? Why in 2022 is the SEC so king at the top?
Yeah, I think that group just collectively adjusted, and that was really – to me, it's really was all about Nick Saban. And when he dug his heels in at Alabama, at that point, it was a defense first, run the ball, game manager, a quarterback mentality. And that was good enough to win you a conference and or national championship. But soon thereafter, he started taking L's from Johnny Football and Ole Miss with a couple of weird runs there. And he took a step back and said, okay, let me go ahead and adjust. And while he did that, I think that's where the gap really started to hit another level, because now offensively Alabama's scoring, you know, at will compared to anybody in college football, but they still have that defensive pedigree that was kind of the hallmark of the SEC when he took over in 07. So I think that filtered down throughout that conference. You know, Auburn was always kind of the little brother, but also would play power spread under Gus Malzahn, hit you in the mouth. Obviously, Saban, assistant coach Kirby Smart, goes over to Georgia. They start controlling the eastern side of the conference with that same blueprint that we've obviously seen have a lot of success there as well. So his footprint was kind of at the beginning of the change, and then, you know, has existed thereafter in the SEC. But to me, college football started to change when the SEC and Big Ten offenses looked at the Big 12 and said, we need to do that. They looked at the Big 12 and the Pac-12, hey, we need to do that stuff on offense and play our defense and we'll be okay. And that's kind of where college football is at this moment. You can't, outside of, I would say, Georgia last year, they could still score a lot of points. But outside of that team, you really can't point to a national champion that felt like it was a defensive-laden team, right? Whether you go towards Alabama in 2020, they were throwing it on everyone and had Najee Harris in the backfield. You go before that point, you had the Clemson runs, you had LSU in 19. My goodness, that offense is – we're going to talk about it forever, it seems like. Even going back to the Deshaun Watsons and then the Ohio State run, with that group, it was really offensively laden in terms of why it was able to hit an apex. But it did supplement it with a capable defense that was opportunistic in the turnover department. So, like you said, college football's always been top-heavy, but when the SEC kind of began to put a stranglehold on everyone else, I think it was when Nick Saban got his bearings and then readjusted the calibration to play big-time offensive football, which he admits was inspired by Big 12 and Pac-12 influences.
John, this may be the greatest question I've ever asked you in my life. I don't know where it came from. This is in my final stupor that I thought, this is the question. Last season, we saw Baylor and Oklahoma State really focus on defense. That was the side of the ball where both of those teams who played in the Big 12 championship put most of their emphasis, because Spencer Rattler is one of their quarterbacks and the other one plays for USF now. So obviously the offenses were not the ones getting it done. How far away is the top of the Big 12 from being at an SEC caliber on that side of the ball?
I don't think it's that far. I mean, obviously, if we talk about the current makeup of the Big 12, yes, we're expecting Baylor to be very good once again going into 2022. Although some of the odds I've been seeing, Drake, have been a little low on the Bears. Really? So if I'm a gambling man, I would look into that. But otherwise, when we talk football, there is an expectation that Baylor's going to be right back at or near the top. And I do think this went into the decision that Dave Aranda made at quarterback. You mentioned it last year. This was a knock them down, drag it out kind of game in the college or in the conference championship game. Obviously, that amazing stop there at the end. I mean, that's what you remember. You remember defense before anything else, the quarterback play notwithstanding. So I think that's part of the reason why you go to a quarterback who throws a little bit better, a little bit more efficiently with Chapin, and a guy who could still push the ball down the field like we saw with that 50-yard toss in the spring game. So I think that's part of it, trying to say, hey, same thing we talked about with Saban. We got it on defense. We're good schematically. We understand our conference. We understand how to win with leverage. But now on offense, can we complement that group with one that's going to keep the defense off the field and or put up a lot of points to keep everybody else at bay and create wider margins of victory? Your starters are playing less. You're healthier later in the season. All these snowball effects that really change the long-term stability of a season and a tenure for a head coach. And I think those are some of the decisions that you now have to make if you're Gundy, if you're Dave Aranda at the top of the Big 12. But look, you know, Texas and Oklahoma are still there. They're still going to factor into this thing quite a bit. And offensively, particularly with Texas, I think that's going to be their calling card once again. The problem was they couldn't stop anybody defensively last year. So they'll try to correct that on the opposite end. But I think that's what gives the Big 12 some flavor going into 2022. There's a lot of different vibes with the top tier schools, and that could create certainly drama and great matchups during the regular season and maybe once again in the conference title game.
Built Bar. All right. You've heard me say it before, and I'll say it again. Your Built Bar is your way to get fit for this summer, right? You're trying, maybe you're already fit. Far be it from me. Maybe you're already fit, but it's a great way to stay fit if you are. Built Bar is like a candy bar, but not, right? You get tempted. You're like, all right, you know, I ate a meal, feeling a little sugar, a little shake, a little tingle. don't go get a candy bar. You know, there's a Mars factory in Waco. Makes 65% of the Snickers that are distributed in the United States. Also makes almost 100% of the Starburst. But if you eat those, you'll gain weight. But if you eat a Built Bar, right, you'll stay healthy. Built Bar, go get it. 130 calories. You got great flavors as well. It's real chocolate, like actual chocolate. And not only is it actual chocolate, it's freaking good tasting stuff. I don't even like chocolate that much. I like Built Bar because they have weird flavors like banana cream pie, raspberry, double chocolate. Go try it at Built.com. That is Built.com. Use promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, John, you know, one of the more mysterious things to happen over the weekend, not just in Baylor Nation, but now in Tampa, Florida, is Gary Bohannon, who it felt like had looks from Oklahoma, Missouri. We had thrown Minnesota in that conversation. Iowa State's court could use, you know, a Gary Bohannon. And now he's in Tampa with the 3-18 South Florida Bulls, their record over the last two seasons. Is there any way to make sense of this from a national perspective?
Look, I was surprised, Drake. I'm not going to lie. Look, I live in Tampa. I'm familiar with Jeff Scott's program. I ran into multiple Bulls assistants on the trail this spring just at high school practices, and they did a good job because none of this came up. You would think they kind of nudge me like, hey, you know, watch out. We might get, you know, Gary, but it didn't really happen. But I think the vision of trying to create that Clemson atmosphere in Tampa is starting to tangibly change off the field. Obviously, look, this is football. You got to do it on the field. But they have really been bad at that position. And I think that's been the compliment of everyone else is like, man, imagine if the quarterback position was a little bit different. They brought in transfers. They brought in pass first guys that it didn't kind of work with. So I think a balanced, experienced, tough player like a Gary Bohannon, especially when you have a not so great offensive line, can maybe bridge some of those gaps and help you get to your skill positions and your defense, which from a talent perspective, USF should be much better with in 2022. But the vision is clear there with Jeff Scott. They're getting a stadium of their own for once, which is great for every FBS school. You need that. And they're starting to change that perception. And there's a lot of folks around that program that'll tell you, this thing is heading in the right direction, but 3-18 is hard to combat off the field. So they've got to do something this year. That's the larger point that I was trying to get to. They got to be all in for this year. And we've seen them truly attack the transfer portal with Power 5 talent. They brought in skill guys from Clemson, from other places to build around. And they just needed that final piece. You know, that they had some nice possibilities at the quarterback position. But I think Bohannon, from an experience, from a talent and physicality standpoint, is about as good as they could have gotten at the position. And I think the door is wide open for him there. And, you know, seeing some reports on what he said about the decision, look, he's confident. He took the visit. He understands the vision, and he's going to bet on himself, much like we saw him do when he went to Baylor in the first place, because this is a guy that had offers to go elsewhere and play elsewhere positionally. So I like a kid betting on himself. The last time USF was really good, they had a quarterback like this who was a guy recruited to play other places, but he bet on himself. His name escapes me. I think Quentin Jackson's his name. He bet on himself, you know, to make things happen and ended up, you know, helping them get to double digit wins and helping their coaches get jobs elsewhere. So I'm not saying it's quite that with Bohannon, but I do think from a run pass standpoint with the talent they've assembled, he could make some noise in 2022. And obviously everyone, I'm sure, listening to this podcast is rooting for him. But my goodness, to beat Power 5 schools for that kid, I thought was a huge surprise and a one that we're going to be looking back on and saying, man, Missouri's not great this year, but they could have had Bohannon at quarterback or same thing for some of these other schools. But look, you got to respect the kid and the decision he makes. So we'll see. Yeah, and maybe Gary just wanted to keep a different shade of green on, you know, to make a transition a little bit smoother.
It's kind of green and gold, just not really in South Florida. But, John, what's interesting to me, we mentioned Tanner Mordecai, who was a midway, I don't even know, I think they're the Lions, I guess. It's a high school in Waco. So everybody kind of knew Tanner Mordecai, Oklahoma, and had picked them. It was like, gosh, you know, there's that bad blood, and he lights things up. But that's not really Gary Bohannon's situation. He threw for 2,200 yards and having touchdowns. He's not. I rode the bench somewhere. I'm Trans Smaller. And just from a guy's perspective, like we've seen this, it's not unprecedented for someone like that to transfer to a smaller school. But is that to team usually that you feel like you have more confidence in a smaller conference to be the guy and not battle with a quarterback battle? What's usually the factors at play when a guy like a Gary Bohannon goes to a South Florida?
Yeah, I think certainly the depth chart is part of it. You know, you're not going to make a decision like this. The whole thing around Dave Aranda making this call earlier than a lot of these coaches was to help the loser, in this case Bohannon, make a move to end up elsewhere to play. You know, let's make no mistake about it. The quarterback market is fluid because kids want to play. Players want to get on the field and have a chance to be the starter. And I think that's exactly what played into this. And then I think schematically, you know, I think at Missouri, they're throwing it a lot more than they're running it. You know, at some of these other schools, it's a little bit more wide open in the passing game. I think what Jeff Scott, who came from Clemson, wants to bring is that balance. He wants to bring that balance with an athletic quarterback who can help him make plays on the move as a runner, but still throw it well enough to challenge a defense to all three levels. So I think it's one of these nice blends of where you could see yourself fitting in that type of offense, like a Deshaun Watson, Taj Boyd's probably a little bit more in Bohannon's wheelhouse from a projection or comparison standpoint at Clemson. But then on the flip side, if you're Bohannon, you're like, hey, I can utilize that skill set and physicality, but I'm also going to throw it a little bit more than I was prior. And I think that's where you could see the benefits coming from both sides. But he also is a self-aware kid, and I think that goes back to him. He's not going to a spread offense that's going to throw it 50 times a game because that's not who he is. So he has kind of that balance of, I need to show more here, but I'm still closer to this side of the spectrum. And that school, that offense, that scheme gives me a little bit more range to hit my mark. And I think that's where USF won out.
John, I want to thank you, as always, for joining every single week. And for people at home that are just now picking up the Locked On Baylor or hearing your name for the first time, where can they find your stuff?
Yeah, real simple, si.com/college. You know, we're tracking all the quarterbacks in the portal, in recruiting, kind of the whole deal this time of year. So certainly check us out there. Just wrote about the quarterback dominoes nationally. But, of course, Baylor doesn't have to worry about that because they've got Austin Novosad committed.
Yeah, they do. And DJ Lex, hashtag DJ2EU. John, thanks, man.
Always a pleasure.
All right, before we get into a conversation about baseball, softball, coaching changes. What? First, I want to tell you about Rock Auto. Rock Auto is your place for all the parts that your car will ever need. Ton of makes and models out there, right? What do you have? Okay, say it in your head. What you have? Nope. I bet it's wrong. I bet you don't know if it's like an XL or an MT or an LL. I have a Nissan Maxima. What kind? I don't know. Prime, Premium. WM, like, right? All these cars have different names for them. And you go to the auto parts store and they ask you what kind of car. And you're like, I don't know, BMW. Like, what kind of BMW? You're like, I don't know. At rockauto.com, save yourself the hassle. Just go to rockauto.com and they know exactly what you need. Get the parts for way cheaper than you would any other store. Rock Auto is going to ship it right to your house, right to your house. You don't have to go to the auto parts store and get hackled. Hackled? It's like a hassle and a heckle. You don't have to do that anymore. RockAuto.com, all the parts your car will never need. Right, Locked On in the way that the how did you hear about us? So they know that we sent you. Rock Auto, amazing selection, reliable, low prices. All the parts your car will never need, ever need at Rock Auto. All right, you know, one of the conversations that I want to have is something that it kind of veers from where I originally wanted to go. You'll see that I changed clothes. I don't have the cowboy hat on anymore in some of these because I know I had really bad Wi-Fi earlier, and I'm sure you've seen that across the video. Thank you if you made it to this point. If you're listening online, you're probably like, God, thank God he's not cutting out anymore. So hopefully I'm not cutting out anymore. But what's interesting to me is this conversation we've been having about baseball, softball, and coaching changes. And granted, look, it is not impossible that we see a coaching change on the baseball side. It is absolutely impossible we see one on the softball side. It's just not going to happen because Glenn Moore has the track record of like 5 World Series. The last one was in 2017 as well. But one of the things that I want to get to, it's really interesting about both these programs, what they're battling with, is here's the deal, okay? Baylor itself, I'm going to put my elbows on the table here. Baylor itself is built different in that they don't recruit the transfer portal like other schools, right? So what I mean by that is let's take a second to realize that these are real people, okay? That person standing at second base, that guy, that girl that just made an error, I know we say this all the time, like, hey, remember, they're just kids. But let's just take a second with me right now to think about that person, okay? They have a mom, they have a dad, just like you. That person has siblings. You know, they went, they graduated high school. They have that same graduation memory from high school that you do. Not only that, they came to Baylor University. I'm sure many people that are listening right now went to Baylor University. And guess what? They're like 2 or 3 years into their schooling. They're trying to get a degree. They had to go to class today. They had a class tomorrow. They have finals. And I know that everywhere else in the nation has that. And that's great. That's not the point that I'm making. The point that I'm making is these are humans that if Baylor really wants to succeed on the baseball diamond or the softball diamond, like a lot of these schools they're competing with, they're going to have to uproot humans out of their program. Softball at Oklahoma State, softball at Texas. You're the starting second baseman for 2 seasons, right? You're really good at your job. You're fine. You're batting 315. You know, you've had 6 home runs last year, 5 the year before. There's a slow progression upward. And then your junior season, you're working to get a degree. When you find out, hey, I'm sorry, we found a girl out of the transfer portal that's better than you, We're gonna have to cut your scholarship. You know how many people are being cut from these teams around the nation, especially in the small sports where you're not seeing it, like baseball and softball, where they lose their opportunity to get a degree, that they have been assured that will be paid for them. And then after 3 years, they realize when they've been doing a fine job, they can no longer play at a university because these schools are out there poaching players from other places, putting them into their programs just solely to win and pay that coaches deep in their pockets. That is happening across the board in college athletics. I can tell you where it's not happening: at Baylor in softball or baseball, for better or for worse, because there is a meeting point, right? There is this juncture, I think, where you have culture meets money. And at some point in time, money's going to matter a little bit more than culture. Money and wins are tied together in this little juncture. So you're, say it's even wins and culture. At some point in time, you've got to win games while obtaining a culture. But what are you going to put more emphasis on? More emphasis is given in college sports at Baylor, everywhere else, in wins. You can have the best culture in the world, but you have to win games or you're going to be fired in every sport in the collegiate game because it is still a job. However, Baylor values that culture part a lot more than other schools, and you're seeing that on the baseball and softball diamonds as those teams struggle this season. You're seeing it in every struggling Baylor sport because it's not just baseball and softball that have fallen on quote-unquote hard times. You can look at a women's tennis program that you're like, okay, why aren't you guys going to the Final Four every year? They're still in the national conversation. They're still in the top 25. They're still really consistent, as are baseball and softball. Right? You can argue against that, sure. But baseball's still been either in the conversation or in the playoffs the last 3 years until this season. This is the first, like, just tanking season. Softball had a rough year a couple years ago. They've had a couple rough years in a row here. They were solid that COVID year that ended. But what the one thing in both these programs that are going right for them is that they're valuing people. That person that started at third base for 2 straight years is not afraid of losing their scholarship, losing their opportunity to get an education at Baylor University because somebody else out there is better. They're not going to be, you can only, there's only one best second baseman in the nation. Okay, they probably don't play for Baylor. So if you're a second baseman at UT or Oklahoma State, you're also not that best player in the nation, and you're constantly in fear that you will lose your scholarship, not get the education you were promised. Someone else fills your spot, even though you're doing just fine, and then you have to transfer to a community college where you play out your days, you get forgotten, you raise a family, and you hope it all goes well for you. Whereas at Baylor University, I know, that when I signed with one of these schools, these squads, baseball, softball, that when I am guaranteed that spot and I start there for 3 years, that my 4th year, no one in this nation, the best player in the country, the Quinn Ewers of the transfer portal, is not going to be brought in and put in my spot. I've been guaranteed an education. I've been guaranteed as a team captain, someone who's a team leader, that I will stay in my position and fulfill what I started at the university that I love. And you know where you don't get that? A lot of freaking other schools. So maybe you're not having as much success as you probably like in baseball or softball or a lot of these smaller sports. I say a lot, some of them. But the reason why is that people, the ones with parents, the ones with siblings, the ones who graduated high school, are being valued so damn well right now. And you can't argue that. You just can't argue that. There are people that are being taken care of because I know Steve Rodriguez and I know Glenn Moore personally. And I say that to say that I know they are damn good people that do right players.
Maybe they don't win a World Series every year. Maybe they struggle. Maybe they're in a down stretch. I right now, especially at Baylor University, value the fact that that starting pitcher, that starting center fielder, that kid out of the bullpen knows that their scholarship's going to be kept, and they know that another transfer is not going to come in here and play in their spot over them after 2 years that they've gave it all out on the field for that team. I know that. Because at the end of the day, you can say, like, that kid's not very good, and maybe they're not the best. Maybe they don't meet the Baylor standard, but you know what? It's still a person, and you got to give some credit to that. Let's not lose sight of that. When we're having the conversations about Baylor softball or Baylor baseball making a coaching change, and one of them might, baseball might do that. Understand still, A, those are freaking kids that are people, and B, those coaches are people too that are just trying to make good people, right? Dave Aranda, people come first. You're seeing it. That's why the spotlight's on baseball softball, because Dave Aranda, Nikki Collins, Scott Drew are putting both culture and wins up there. But I'm telling you, in these small sports, they're not paying near as much attention on the regulations of the transfer portal, and things are going insane. Look at Oklahoma. Look at Oklahoma State. Look at Texas and softball specifically. Those are the ones that I know really well. It's not okay for the sport, and Baylor's saying we're not going to fall into that trap, and I'm okay with that. You don't have to be. You don't have to be. But I'm just telling you, these are people, and that has to be taken into account here, because it's getting wild. Hopefully my microphone was not cutting out for that. Tomorrow's show, Josh Pate joins the show from CBS and 27 Sports. Excited to have that guy. It's going to be really good. Talking Dave Aranda as maybe the best head coach under 45 years of age in the entire nation. Josh says yes, and we'll see why. Thank you for making Locked On Baylor your first listen every day. Make your second listen Locked On Big 12. They've got you covered with 30 minutes or less. Josh Neighbors is a expert. He's an expert when it comes to Big 12 news. They get you covered. Go listen to them. Check them out. Just at least check out one show from Locked On Big 12. See if you like it. This has been, as it will be tomorrow and the rest of time, Locked On Baylor.